turn to Proverbs 6:25. I'm going to cover another two verses tonight, Lord willing. Proverbs 6:25, it says, "Lust not after her beauty in thine heart, neither let her take thee with her eyelids." So let's look at the first phrase there, "Lust not after her beauty in thine heart." And this is where sin begins. It begins in the heart with lust. And the heart is kind of like the organ of lust. And I'll talk about that in a second. But if you look at James chapter 1, verses 14 and 15, this, of course, we're primarily talking about lusting after the strange woman, but all types of lust begin in the heart and end in sin if they are not stopped. James chapter 1, 14 through 15 says, "But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death." So it begins with a temptation, and then the lust towards whatever that temptation is, and then the lust conceives and it brings forth sin. So the lust in itself is not necessarily sinful, because lust is a desire. So you could have a desire for something, but if that if the desire becomes uncontrollable, then it's sin. Or if the desire is for something sinful in and of itself, then of course it's sin as well. But just the desire is not necessarily sinful, because like Paul says that I covet your prayers, and covet and lust are the same thing essentially. Paul said he would not know in lust except the law had said thou shalt not covet. And so when Paul said he coveted their prayers, he's lusting after their prayers, desiring their prayers, but he's not obviously sinning doing it. And like I said, the heart is basically the organ of lust, spiritually speaking. In Psalm 81 and verse 12, Paul also told the Corinthians to covet the best gifts, I'm pretty sure. So yeah, it's one of those things that's not always sinful. It just depends on the context. Psalm 81 and verse 12. The Lord says, because Israel would not hearken unto him, he says, "So I gave them up unto their own heart's lust." The hearts there has an apostrophe. So the lust is the possession of the heart. "And they walked in their own counsels." And this is, as we've talked about in Proverbs chapter 1 and different places, that this is one of the Lord's signature judgments, is that he judges us by giving us whatever that is that we desire, if that thing is contrary to him. So sometimes God doesn't have to do anything to punish us except just back off and say, okay, go ahead and do whatever you want, and then you'll suffer your consequences. Also in Romans chapter 1 and verse 24, it can be a good technique also with discipline, whether it's a child or an employee or somebody, that they're just itching to do something. You keep telling them, no, that's not a good idea, don't do that. You finally just say, okay, go ahead. And they're like, oh, man, that hurts when I pounded my finger with a hammer. Yeah, well, I told you not to do that. You know. So sometimes that can be a good teacher. Romans 1 and verse 24. "Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves." And this is basically talking about what Solomon's talking about here. He hasn't gotten into sodomy yet there, and Paul hasn't in verse 24. Later on he does, but right there he's talking about fornication. He gave them up to their own heart's lust, so the lust of their own hearts. So all sin begins in the heart, and then it comes out through the members. To lust is, and I'm going to skip the first three definitions because they are all prior to 1611. To lust means to have a strong, excessive, or inordinate desire, and then it is used with for, or after, or unto, and that's exactly how it's used here. Lust not after her beauty in thine heart. So this is the definition to be used. It can specifically refer to sexual desire, and that's probably how we think of it most of the time when you hear about somebody lusting after something. It's usually not apples or bananas or something. It's typically, you know, it's sexual in nature. Although if you've just got done fasting for a day or something, you could lust after an apple or a banana, right? That looks really good. It says, lust not after her beauty in thine heart. I always like reading definitions of words like this, because this would be a word if you said, define for me what beauty is. And it's one of those things where I can identify it and I can point you to it and I can give you an example of it. But if you said, describe for me what is beauty, I'd be like, something that looks good. You know, it's really hard to do. And I just think this definition is spot on. Beauty is such combined perfection of form and charm of coloring as affords keen pleasure to the sense of sight. And then it gives, part A is the first specific instance of this. It says, in the human face or figure. And that's more times than not when we refer to something beautiful, we're usually referring to a person, normally a woman. They're usually better looking than men, right? But that's typical. Sometimes an animal is beautiful or a tree is beautiful or something, but a lot of times it's referring to humankind. And I just thought that was interesting as I thought about it. The combined perfection of form and charm of coloring. And if you thought about it, why is one person's face beautiful and another person's face isn't as beautiful? Well, it's because it doesn't have the same form and the same coloring, because that's pretty much what it comes down to. But it is such a subjective thing, because why is one woman just beautiful and another woman just looks okay? And I mean, they all have a nose and ears and mouth. I mean, it's just slight differences in form. And it's really interesting and perplexing to me why certain things are beautiful to certain people and certain things aren't, and when they're really very similar. It's just something to think about anyway. And I thought the definition was pretty neat. So it's not only a sin to physically commit adultery with a woman, it's also a sin to do so in your heart. And that's what Solomon's getting at here. Lust not after her beauty in thine heart. Let's look at just three verses here. Matthew 5:28, which we're probably all familiar with this one. Every man should have this one memorized, or at least the concept memorized. Jesus said, "But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart." So the sin has actually been committed before it's physically acted on, right? It can be done in the heart. And though men can't see what's going on in the heart, but God sees what goes on in the heart. So God knows when adultery has been committed. And if, like, this is actually possible. Like, if, let's say somebody was exposed and caught that they had been viewing pornography. And clearly, it'd be pretty hard to view pornography without lusting in your heart after this person. So even though they hadn't technically committed adultery, like, physically yet, but if you find that, then you have really proof of what's going on in that person's heart. Unless they're like, well, I'm just doing it for to admire the beauty and the form of these people or something, which is, you know, probably BS. But so anyway, whenever something is proven, or for instance, if a guy finds out that his wife has been carrying on an online conversation with some other man or vice versa, you can say, okay, the adultery was going on in the heart, clearly, if the communication was of that nature, even though they never touched each other. So you could be guilty of adultery and even put out of the church for adultery if it could be exposed what was going on in here. Or if some guy just got up in front of the church and just says, I just got something I want to say. I feel really bad. I've been lusting after another woman in my heart. Well, dummy, you just admitted to adultery, and, you know, in front of everybody. So anyway, be careful what you say. Job 31 and verse 1. I wasn't present for this, but I heard a story that happened in another church where somebody was, I'm assuming it was a church member and not somebody confessing for baptism or something, but they were addressing the congregation and feeling bad about something and just kind of wanted to get it off their chest. And the pastor's like, whoa, stop, because you're about ready to get excluded here because you're just admitting to some excludable offense to everybody, and it's publicly known. Job 31 and verse 1. Job says, I made a covenant with mine eyes. Why then should I think upon a maid? So the covenant of marriage is made ultimately with the eyes, that you will not look to another as the object of your romantic sexual love. That's why I think it was Abimelech told Sarah, Abraham's wife, that Abraham was to her a covering of the eyes. Because Abraham gave, said, it's my sister, and then she ended up going in and didn't end up becoming the man's wife because God restrained him. But he reproved Sarah and said, Abraham's a covering of your eyes, so you shouldn't be looking at anybody else. And same thing was true with a man. And then in 2 Peter 2 and verse 14, Peter talks about wicked people, reprobates, people that are not saved, in other words, and this whole chapter is devoted to those people. And in verse 14, here's one of their characteristics: having eyes full of adultery that cannot cease from sin, beguiling unstable souls, and heart have they exercised with covetous practices, cursed children. So it's interesting there, they have eyes full of adultery and at heart that exercise covetous practices, lusts of the heart. So that kind of goes together with eyes full of adultery. But this just shows you, once again, third witness, that adultery can be committed in the heart just by looking. Doesn't have to be physical. So men must stop themselves from having a strong, excessive, or inordinate desire for a woman's beauty other than their wife's, because that's the definition of lust. Strong, excessive, inordinate desire. Now, you can have that desire towards your wife, and you should, but not towards another woman. That's where the trouble comes. And I learned this from from the guy that had a lot to do with my conversion years ago. I remember he said it was a saying that's similar to this. The line between admiring beauty and lusting after it is very thin, and it only takes about 2 seconds to cross. Because he said, what's the difference? I think I said, well, and I was just kind of playing devil's advocate, like, well, what if somebody was looking at nude pictures of people and they were just doing it just to admire the beauty of the human body that God has created or something? And he said, do you know what the difference is between admiring beauty and lust? I said, no. And he said, about 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of truth to that, that, you could look at a beautiful woman or a beautiful man, for that matter, a handsome man or something, and admire the person's beauty, and then it just takes just a second, all of a sudden your mind goes somewhere where it shouldn't go. So just something to be careful of. But admiring, there is nothing wrong with admiring beauty. And I can even admire a handsome man. My wife asked me the other day, who do you think the most handsome man you've ever seen is? I said, George Clooney. And I think he's a really handsome man. So you can admire beauty without lusting after somebody, but you just gotta be careful with that. So the old foolish saying, you can look but you can't touch, is as wicked as hell, mm-hmm. Right? That is just one of the most irritating, obnoxious, atrocious sayings that I've ever heard, and I really hate it. You cannot look or touch somebody that you're not married to. And then the second part of the verse, neither let her take thee with her eyelids. So women are the weaker vessel, we're told in 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. I'm going to make a point off of this, obviously. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. So the wife is the weaker vessel, obviously physically weaker. Most women certainly are than men, but women yet have great power over men. And here's the interesting thing that we're going to see here as we get into this. A woman can use her eyelid. Now, I can't think of probably a less powerful muscle in your body than your eyelid. Can you? I can't think. Your eyelid doesn't have much. I mean, grab a hold of your eyelashes and then try to blink. It's pretty hard to overpower your fingers, right? I mean, your eyelids don't have hardly any strength in them. But yet a woman with her eyelids can take a man. That's amazing. You think about that. That's really something. But we'll get into that in just a second. But just think about this. Three examples here. Adam was a sinless man, so the most righteous man that ever lived until Jesus Christ came along. And yet his wife took him down, brought him down, right? Genesis 3:6. She gave to her husband and he did eat. And then Solomon was an exceeding wise man, wisest man that ever lived, except Jesus said, a greater than Solomon is here. So except for Jesus Christ, Solomon was the wisest man that ever lived. And guess what? His outlandish wives caused him to sin. They brought him down. And we read about that in Nehemiah 13 and verse 26. I've read that to you several times. And then Samson, the strongest, well, I don't know if he's the strongest man, but he was a very, very strong man. Obviously, the things that Samson could do were superhuman, basically. And yet, his wife, Delilah, brought him down, right? She kept getting on him and nagging him and appealing to, you know, if you lovest me, if you really love me, you'd tell me the secret or whatever. You remember the story. And she brought him down. So here we have an extremely righteous man, an extremely physically strong man, and an extremely intelligent man, all three brought down by a woman. So that's just interesting to think about the power that women have over men. All a woman has to do is look at a man in a certain way or move her eyelids in a certain way in order to take him. And that is true. It's amazing. It really is. The word take means to seize, grasp, capture, catch, and related senses in literal and physical sense. It is to lay hold upon, get into one's hands by force or artifice. Is that artifice or artifice?
Artifice.
Okay. To seize, capture, especially in war, to make prisoner, hence to get into one's power, to win by conquest a fort, town, country, also to apprehend a person charged with an offense, to arrest, to seize property by legal process, as by distraint, to catch, capture a wild beast, bird, fish, etc., also of an animal, to seize or catch prey, to catch the fancy of, or to catch the fancy or affection of, to excite a liking in, to captivate, delight, charm, to fetch. So when you get the whole way down to number 10 there, then you start to get to the particular definition here that would be used in context. But when you take something, you take it by force, you capture it, grasp it, grab it, pull it to yourself. And literally, a woman could capture, grab, and take a man with her little eyelids that was the biggest bodybuilder the world's ever seen. It's amazing. Talking about the wild beast there, to catch or capture, wild beast, fish, bird, animal thing. I just watched a video the other day. This poor little gazelle got caught by a crocodile and pulled into this pond. And the crocodile just had a hold of one of her legs. And the gazelle was kept trying to get out. And the crocodile wasn't really like rolling her or anything, but he just had a hold of her and she kept trying to get away and she couldn't get away, kept trying to get away. And eventually she finally gets away and climbs up out of there and then just kind of starts walking away like nothing. And this leopard comes out of the bush and bam, it kills her.
Oh my goodness. It was doomed.
I know. And she wasn't paying a bit of attention. She's just like, whew, got away from him. And then just... Yeah, nature's cruel. Wow. So the strange woman doesn't take a man by physical force, but by lustful attraction, by her flattering speech, and her alluring look. Those are usually the two ways that she takes him. Proverbs 7 and verse 21, first of all. Proverbs 7, verse 21. Says, with her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips, she forced him. Once again, your lips are not very strong, right? Not much muscle in your lips, but all you got to do is move them in the right way and make the air pass over them in the right way with some help of your vocal cords and your tongue. And you just say a few words, and you have a lot of power over a man. And then also by the alluring look, Proverbs 7 and verse 10. It says, and behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. So that's why it's so important for women to understand that to wear clothes that reveal cleavage or thighs or just really tight clothing, that is very provocative to men, and that a woman can easily take a man just by that clothing combined with flattering words. and the look in her eye. I mean, that those three things right there could bring down any man that doesn't is not on his guard, and God has not given grace to withstand it. So a woman only needs her eyes to ravish a man. Song of Solomon 4 and verse 9. This is talking about Solomon's wife, but the same power is there present, whether it's used for good or for evil. Song of Solomon 4 and verse 9 says, "Thou," Solomon speaking to his wife, "thou hast ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. Thou hast ravished my heart with one of thine eyes, with one chain of thy neck." So, typically, you know, ravish basically means like to carry away by force, like it's almost rape. And so when men ravish women, like it talks about, you know, in war when women were ravished and things like that, it's a totally different thing. And that's done by physical force, but women can ravish men just by looks, basically. And then Song of Solomon 6 and verse 5 says, "Turn away thine eyes from me, for they have overcome me." See the power that the woman's eyes has over the man? "Thy hair is as a flock of goats that appear from Gilead." So yeah, there's a lot of power in the eyes. There's an old saying that the eye is the window of the soul. And I think there's a lot of truth in that saying. You can probably learn more about a person or figure out what's going on in their head by their eyes than anything else. I mean, the whole face, of course, but the eyes especially. The eyes tell so much to people that pay attention and can, you know, some people are just clueless and they don't pick up on any cues, but to people that, you know, have a little bit of acumen there and can read people, the eyes say a lot. The look of the eyes can reveal lust or love, either one. You know, Solomon's wife was taking him, and that was true, you know, biblical marital love, but the strange woman's eyes can take a man through lust. So when a woman who's not a man's wife looks at him with alluring eyes and flattering eyelids, he should run. Don't even try to resist that one. And of course, it just makes a lot of men feel so good and feel so special and important that some woman would flatter him either with her eyelids or with her speech or something, that a lot of times he doesn't want to run because he just liking this, right? Even if he's not going to go and commit adultery, he likes feeling special, but you want to run right away. Stay away from a woman like that. Proverbs 4, 14 through 15, "Enter not into the path of the wicked and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it, pass not by it, turn from it and pass away." And that would go for the way of evil women as well. Now, the adulteress hunts for the precious life, just like a hunter hunts an animal to take it. So hunting and taking go hand in hand. We'll talk about hunting in the next verse in Proverbs 6:26. It says, "For by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life." And you hunt in order to take. Let me just show you a couple of verses here. First of all, 1 Samuel 24 and verse 11. 1 Samuel 24, verse 11. This is David speaking to Saul, his father-in-law. It says, "Moreover, my father, see the skirt of thy robe in my hand." That's after he'd cut it off. For in that I cut off the skirt of thy robe and killed thee not, know thou and see that there is neither evil nor transgression in mine hand, and I have not sinned against thee. Yet thou huntest my soul to take it." Hunt to take. She takes him with her eyelids. She hunts for him and then takes him with the eyelids. And let me give you one more. Proverbs 12 and verse 27. "The slothful man roasteth not that which he took," past tense of take, "which he took in hunting." So you go hunting to take an animal. The strange woman goes hunting to take a man. She hunts on the street corner. We hunt out in the woods, right? But you go wherever the prey are, and the prey are on the street corners, right? That's where you go. Now, the godly man will escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 26. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 26. Solomon said, I find more bitter than death a woman whose heart is snares and nets, and her hands as bands. Whoso pleaseth God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be taken by her. So her heart is snares and nets. She takes the man, right? I mean, conceived in her heart is this plan to take him. There are snares and nets in that heart. And her weapons, her tools, are her eyelids and her lips. That's what she uses to take the man and snare him. And the man that pleases God will escape from her because he will listen to what Solomon has been teaching here. And he will recognize the strange woman. He will recognize the flattery. He'll recognize that look in her eye when she's trying to entice him. And he's going to say, no way. I remember what Solomon said. I remember what God said. And I know that adulterers and whoremongers God will judge, and he gets out of there. But the sinner shall be taken by her. That's why it's so important to read the Bible, hide it in your heart, and then use it to govern your life and live by it. And you won't be taken by the strange woman. Turn to Proverbs 6:26. Still talking about the strange woman. But don't worry, we'll only be talking about her for the next couple of months, so it's not going to be too long. Proverbs 6 and verse 26. For by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. So there's some really important stuff in here. So the first part, for by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread. So first of all, let's define whorish. Whorish is having the character of a whore, addicted to whoredom, lewd, unchaste, of a woman, rarely of a man. The man usually is called a whoremonger, if it is referring to this. So a whorish person is somebody that has a characteristic of a whore. A whore is a woman who prostitutes herself for hire, a prostitute, harlot. More generally, an unchaste or lewd woman, a fornicatress, or an adult or adulteress. And then the phrase to play the whore of a woman means to commit fornication or adultery. When I was growing up, I don't know if you guys have even heard this term or not, it was in vogue when I was in high school, but if some girl was sleeping around, you call her a hoe. Have you ever heard that?
Probably. I didn't know that stuff in school.
Right.
But
I know.
Refers to, yeah.
Okay. So you've heard. So you've heard it from your Christian son, but you never heard it out there in the world. Okay. Yeah.
Well, so. I heard it from Kevin.
But
that's another story.
When I was at school, they called
them
loose.
Loose. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That.
Yeah. And they would. Yeah. That. So I never thought a thing about it, and then somebody said, "This is." You know, quite some time ago, but they said that, and I don't know if they knew this for sure, but that they thought that it probably came from whore. Like, it's just kind of a shortened version of whore, like you're a hoe, you're a whore. And I never picked up on that anyway. But it's funny the types of the things that people say a generation ago, and then they kind of just pass out of existence, and you don't hear those type of words anymore. But anyway. So a whorish woman is a woman that commits fornication or adultery. See, she can be a prostitute, but she doesn't have to be. This says, you know, more generally, it's just an unchaste or lewd woman or a fornicator. Fornication is voluntary sexual intercourse between a man in restricted use, an unmarried man, and an unmarried woman in Scripture extended to adultery. So a whorish woman, then, is a woman who has voluntary sexual intercourse with a man that she's not married to. And then that kind of broadens the umbrella a little bit and puts a lot of women and men under that definition of a whore. So this verse says that a man will be brought to a piece of bread by a whorish woman. I just like the way the King James states things like that. He shall be brought to a piece of bread. And if it wasn't obvious what this means, it means that you'll be brought to extreme poverty, like somebody that would be in a prison would be. Jeremiah 37 and verse 21 gives us an example of a man that was brought to a piece of bread. In this case, it was a godly man. He didn't do anything to deserve this, but this is what happened to him. Jeremiah 37 and verse 21. Then Zedekiah the king commanded that they should commit Jeremiah into the court of the prison, and that they should give him daily a piece of bread out of the baker's street until all the bread in the city were spent. Thus Jeremiah remained in the court of the prison. So they would give him daily a piece of bread. He was brought to a piece of bread. That's pretty much his entire possessions and his entire food was a piece of bread. That's all he had. He's laying in the court of the prison in the dungeon. So that kind of gives you an idea of what Solomon's saying here when he says that by means of a whorish woman, a man should be brought to a piece of bread. Like, he's going to be brought to pretty much nothing. Like, he's going to be desolate. You know, when you have only a piece of bread to eat every day, you're not in very good shape. And this really goes along with what Job said in Job 31, 9 through 12, when he said that adultery would root out all of his increase. Job 31, 9 through 12. He said, if mine heart have been deceived by a woman, or if I have laid wait at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind unto another, and let others bow down upon her. For this is an heinous crime, and yea, it is an iniquity to be punished by the judges, for it is a fire that consumeth to destruction and would root out all mine increase. In other words, it would bring him to nothing. All of his increase, all of his wealth would be rooted out and gone, and he would be left with a piece of bread, if he was lucky. Now, this could happen in numerous ways. I'm not going to read these verses here for you because we've been over them already, and I'll just refresh your memory. So his wife could leave him and take half of all his wealth, and then take a large portion of his paycheck for alimony and child support, right? Lest thine honor be given unto others, and thy years unto the cruel, lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labor be in the house of a stranger, Proverbs 5:10. Or he could be brought to a piece of bread by contracting STDs that will destroy his health, prevent him from working, and run up large medical bills, Proverbs 5:11. And thou mournest the last when thy flesh and thy body are consumed. Or it could also happen that God could just chasten him by reducing him to poverty, by causing him to lose his job, or by destroying his wealth by any number of means. I mean, God he controls tornadoes and hurricanes and floods and fires. And I mean, he could bring you to a piece of bread seven ways from Sunday. It'd be so easy for the Lord to do that. He wouldn't even have to break a sweat. Turn with me to 1 Samuel 2 and verse 7. So if a man is stupid enough to contemplate going into a strange woman and then to think, well, how could the Lord bring me to a piece of bread? I mean, I got a pretty good job and da-da-da. And then his house burns down that night or a tornado comes through. I mean, anything can happen. It would be just so easy. And that's just foolish thinking to think that, oh, I don't see how God could do that. Don't test him. 1 Samuel 2 and verse 7 says, the Lord maketh poor and maketh rich. He bringeth low and lifteth up. So yes, the Lord, it says in another place, that he giveth thee power to get wealth. But he also makes poor, so he can do either one. He can promote you or he can demote you. And a fast track to demotion is going into the strange woman. You want to be demoted, that's the way to do it. And that'll make it happen quickly. And then the second part of the verse. And the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. So this particular whorish woman in this verse is an adulteress. We read from the definition that it could be an adult, or it could be a fornicator, right? Or it could be a prostitute or something. But this woman here that he's referring to is obviously a married woman because she is an adulteress that's hunting for the precious life. And the adulteress is a hunter of men. And this kind of goes with the previous verse about taking him with her eyelids. Remember, you hunt in order to take. Well, to hunt means to go in pursuit of wild animals or game, to engage in the chase. And I think this is why women that are like that they like to do it. It's a challenge. They like to go for the chase, right? And especially the precious life. We'll get to the precious life here in a minute. But that makes it all the better. It's like if you can get the precious life, it's like killing a 14-point buck or something. You know, most hunters, if you've been doing it for a while, you're not going to be satisfied with a doe or a spike or a 4-point or something. You want to go for the big one, right? It's the same way with the strange woman. She doesn't want to go after just some schlub. She wants to go after some good catch. And this is what she does. We'll talk about that in just a second. It's also, when it speaks of animals, it's to pursue their prey. And that's, I believe that men are referred to that by that term, prey, if I'm not mistaken here, when it's referring to the strange woman. It's to pursue wild animals or game for the purpose of catching or killing, to chase for food or sport, often especially or specifically to pursue with hounds or other tracking beasts, also said of animals chasing their prey. And then figuratively and generally, it is to search, seek, and that can be used with after or for anything. And this is what she does. The adulteress will hunt for the precious life. It is to search or seek for anything, especially with eagerness and exertion. It is to go eagerly in search of, search for, seek, especially with desire and diligence, to endeavor to capture, obtain, or find. It's a pretty good definition, because when you get to Proverbs chapter 7, which we will here in a few weeks, we will see that this woman really is the embodiment of this definition of hunt, because she was not just standing on the street corner and waiting, but she was going after him, and she was flattering him, and she's telling him about her bed and how it's all decked with precious things, and her husband's not away. He's away, and he's not going to be back for a long time. She's going on, and she's got peace offerings with her, and she's religious. I mean, she's really, really trying here. So she was hunting, eagerly searching with diligence. And she pursues men earnestly with desire and diligence in order to catch them. I will just read a couple of verses here from Proverbs chapter 7, 12 and 13. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait at every corner. What do you do when you go hunting? You go outside, you go without, right? You're not in your own house. She's without, she's in the streets, because that's where you're going to catch them, lying in wait at every corner. What do you do when you go hunting? You lie in wait, right? You go and you find a tree and you stand next to it, you crawl up in one, and you wait. And you wait for the poor little animal to come across your path. And this is what the strange woman does. So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. So she catches him because she's a hunter. That's what hunters do. And she ultimately kills him, which is what hunters do to animals. 22 through 23, Proverbs 7:22. He goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteth to the snare, and knoweth not that it is for his life. And then we're told in Proverbs 5 and verse 23 that he shall die without instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray, referring to the guy that goes to the strange woman. So she's a hunter, and she lies in wait for the prey. Proverbs 23, 27 through 28. I knew a man was called a prey when it came to a strange woman. I couldn't remember the verse. This is the verse. Verse 27, for a whore is a deep ditch, and a strange woman is a narrow pit. She also lieth in wait as for a prey, and increaseth the transgressors among men. Lies in wait is for a prey. That goes so well with the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. So men, beware of the woman who pursues you. Now, none of us are single here, but especially for single men, nowadays things are so backwards and turned on their heads. It used to be men pursued women, and men asked women out on dates, and men paid when they go out on dates and things. And now these dirtbags, they don't even pay when they go out on dates. It's like they share the bill or something. I was flabbergasted to find this out, but women, when I was in Minneapolis and I had met up with some younger-ish people in their 30s, they were all single people, and this one woman was, we were playing some kind of a game, I think, and I don't remember, somehow I said something about men paying for women's dates, and this woman just looked at me like, huh? Who are you dating? Like, she was just surprised, like, I've never been on a date like that. And yeah, it's just, it's pathetic. And women ask men out these days, and it's just, that's, everything's strange. But be careful about the woman that pursues you, right? It's one thing if a godly young lady is interested in a guy and maybe she puts a bug in some other person's ear and that other person says, hey, you ever consider maybe asking her out or something? I think that's fine. I don't think, but when you just walk up and say, hey, you want to go out to dinner tonight or whatever, like that's kind of, I don't know, maybe I'm just old fashioned, but that's really not the way it's supposed to be done, right? The man's supposed to be pursuing the woman generally. What's that?
Being very forward.
Right, exactly. And that would not be attractive to a godly man. It wouldn't be attractive to me, anyway. I don't think there's anything wrong with a woman dropping hints or something like that, just to maybe let you know that she would be interested or something, but yeah, I don't think it should go much further than that, personally. Then we're told the whorish adulteress hunts for the precious life. Precious is of great price, having a high value, costly, such as precious metals. Secondly, it is of great moral, spiritual, or non-material worth, held in high esteem, such as the precious blood of Christ. And that's actually what the dictionary, they give those examples there, the precious body of Christ. So something that is precious is extremely valuable and has high worth, either its physical material worth or else its spiritual and moral worth. And of course, she, well, I suppose she could be going after the guy with the money too, but I don't believe that's what this is speaking of. I think this is speaking of the good man that she's going after, the precious life, not the man that has wealth. She doesn't delight in catching vile sinners, but rather highly valued men, men of great moral and spiritual worth, men who are held in high esteem. That's who she really wants to go after. She loves to catch a Christian man who is known for his godliness, like Joseph. Turn back there to Genesis 39, 7 through 12. This is a classic example of a woman, of an adulteress who was hunting for the precious life. Joseph was a good man, and she really wanted him. And she didn't just stop the first time. She tried, and he resisted her, and then she tried again when nobody was around. She was diligent, just like the woman here in Proverbs 6 and 7. Genesis 39, 7 through 12. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph. What did Solomon tell us? Neither let her take thee with her eyelids. She cast her eyes upon him. She had her eye upon him, and she was probably looking at him with that look, telling him that she liked him. And she said, lie with me. Now, when you talk about direct, that's direct right there. When a woman comes up to you that you're not married to and says, lie with me, yeah, you better do what Joseph did and run. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? This is why Joseph was such a good man, because he was not going to sin against his master who had entrusted him with such responsibility, but more importantly, he was not going to do this great wickedness and sin against God, right? Because if a man's only concern is, well, you know, that might make the woman's husband upset or mad or, you know, devastated. You know, in the heat of the moment, that's probably not going to change your mind too much. But whenever you think, I don't want to sin against God, that's a different story. And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, I said twice, I mean, she's doing this constantly. I mean, every day she's coming by and trying to butter him up. Spoke to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. So he resisted her over and over and over again. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him, just like the woman in Proverbs chapter 7. She caught him with an impudent face, said unto him. Remember that? She caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. So, unfortunately, this did not turn out well for Joseph. But it always pays off to do the right thing in the end. He did end up put in prison, but then he ended up being taken out of prison and being made second in command in Egypt. And he did the right thing. He fled out of her hand. And remember what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 6:18, flee fornication? This is precisely what he did. He fled and got him out. But she wanted to catch this godly man because that would have been quite a prize. And you know what? A woman like that, the more you resist her, the more she wants you, because it's, you know, the prize keeps getting higher and higher, because the more you resist, that means that the better the man you are and the more she wants you. And that's why, if at all possible, just stay away from her entirely. Don't, you know, in his case, he didn't have much choice. But if you can, stay away from a woman like that. The strange woman also likes to catch pastors who are highly esteemed. 1 Thessalonians 5:12 through 13. Because if she can bring down a pastor, she got a pretty good prize. 1 Thessalonians 5:12 through 13. It says, and we beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their works' sake, and be at peace among yourselves. So church members are to esteem the pastor very highly. And what does precious mean? It means of great moral, spiritual, non-material worth, held in high esteem. All right, so if she's going after the precious life and she's going after a life that is highly esteemed, well, the Bible tells you right there, somebody that's supposed to be highly esteemed, that would be the guy to go after. And that's a pretty good prize, right, to get a preacher. And many, many preachers have been brought down by the strange woman. And it's probably their fault, just as my, obviously I don't blame the strange woman, because most of them, I'm sure, were going after her. I suppose maybe some of them were the victim, but probably most of them were complicit in it, and obviously ultimately complicit no matter what, you know, who started it. So the godly young man, or old man for that matter, and the pastor must therefore always be on his guard so as to not get drawn into the snare of the whorish woman, because she goes after the precious life. So that takes care of verse 26. And next week we'll get into verse 27. And we're going to be able to cover maybe several verses in one shot next week. They're going to go a little faster, Lord willing.